This is the last day of this November 2013 7-day session. And we'll finish up our account, the autobiographical account of the sixth patriarch, Wei Nung, which begins the Platform Sutra. And then we'll just segue from there into the koan that is about this key meeting that the sixth patriarch had. So we left off yesterday where the fifth patriarch had given the robe and bowl to Wei Nung, making him the sixth patriarch. Then the two of them had fled the monastery. The fifth patriarch had warned Wei Nung that his life would be in danger, that he needed to get out of there. And the fifth patriarch took him down to the ferry, and that's where we left off. We're reading here from the Platform Sutra translated by Red Pine. Less than 2 months later, I reached Taiyu Ridge. Unknown to me, several hundred people had been chasing me, hoping to catch me and take away the patriarch's robe. But they had all given up halfway, all except one monk. You got to wonder about what would drive hundreds of people to go off in chase of the man who their abbot had given the robe and the bowl to. We have to make some allowance for the myth element of all of this. It makes for a great story, which is one reason I've been toggling between two translations, because one had more color to it and was some embellishments that were added. But a myth, Roshi Kapoor used to say, a myth is a truth so large that it can't be encompassed in mere fact. And we see in this story of the sixth patriarch, as he tells it himself at the beginning of the Platform Sutra, we see many elements that are vital to Zen practice and training, and teaching, most of which we've already gone through. But I wanted to quote the words of Black Elk about the truth of myth. He said, "Whether it happened or not, I do not know. But if you think about it, you can see that it's true." So now we're going to pick up with koan number 23 in the Mumonkan, "Think Neither Good Nor Evil." And it starts off, we'll just do the case at first. Here's how it goes. The sixth patriarch was pursued by Monk Myo up to Daiyure. The patriarch, seeing Myo coming, laid the robe and the bowl on a rock and said, This robe symbolizes the faith. Is it to be fought for? You may take it away. Myo tried to lift it, but it was as immovable as a mountain. Faltering and trembling, Myo said, I have come for the Dharma, not for the robe. I beg you, lay brother, to open the way for me. The Sixth Patriarch said, thinking neither good nor evil, at this very moment, what is the original self of Monk Myo? At this, Myo was all at once enlightened. His whole body was dripping with sweat. With tears flowing, he bowed down and asked, besides these secret words and meanings, is there anything else deeper still? The Patriarch said, what has been revealed to you is not secret. If you look into your own true self, what is secret is right there. Myo said, though I trained under Obai with the other monks, I could not awaken to my true self. Now, thanks to your instruction, I am like one who has drunk water and actually knows for himself whether it is cold or warm. Lay brother, you are my teacher. The Patriarch said, we both have Obai for our teacher. Live up to your attainment with care. This from our own collection of koan workbooks. This is a version that reflects pretty much all of the translations that that I could find in putting this one together. So now. So we read that several hundred were chasing after. You know, perhaps their zeal in their crusade in catching the Sixth Patriarch and getting retrieving the robe and the bowl came from the fact that he was still a lay person. This would have been a pretty shocking thing at the time. The fifth patriarch giving the robe and bowl Dharma transmission to a layman. It's hard, perhaps, for many people to understand what a huge divide this is in Asia. Between lay people and monks. Even in this country, there are many, many teachers who won't give Dharma transmission to anyone who isn't ordained. Well, the fifth patriarch did, if we can believe this account. You have to wonder, didn't these monks check with the fifth patriarch before setting off? Well, the other account, the Red Pine translation, said that they all gave up about halfway, all except for one monk. And his Chinese name was Wei Shun. And the Japanized his name to Myo, this monk Myo. And the patriarch, seeing Myo coming, this Myo had been a high-ranking general, according to the story. So he was a man of a fierce temperament, a real warrior who was not to be denied this robe and the bowl. He must have been just beside himself with indignation that this young layman would be set off with the precious robe and bowl. So the patriarch laid the robe and the bowl on a rock before him. and said, this robe symbolizes the faith. It's a symbol. Do you really want to fight for it? Go ahead. Take it. What does they say about the dog that finally catches the car? Doesn't know what to do with it. So we see here that Myo tried to lift it, but it was as immovable as a mountain. Now this, many people would take this as a kind of a magical element to the story. Not necessarily. There is such a thing, I'm told, in psychology called a conversion symptom that would explain something like this. It also would explain somewhat a story that Eiken Roshi tells in his commentary on the Mumonkan. He said, I am reminded of Frederick Frank's story of his conversion to vegetarianism. As a small child during World War I, he lived with his family in Holland, which was then a neutral country. It was about a mile from the Belgian border. And so he witnessed, and these are Frederick Frank's words, the incomprehensible horror of seeing living human flesh in the tatters of German, Belgian, and French uniforms coming across the border on push carts and other improvised ambulances. It sensitized me against all forms of physical violence. And then Eiken Roshi picks up from there. During those childhood years, Frank was forced against his will to eat fish and meat and became preoccupied with a homegrown koan. Is it more evil to eat whole sardines than a slice of cod? Finally, one day his doubts were resolved. And then these are back to Frederick Frank's words. It happened in a restaurant when a fragrant fillet of sole was put in front of me. I took my fork, but it refused to touch the fish. I ate the potatoes and never knowingly ate animal flesh again. So maybe it's literally true that this big bruising general of a monk couldn't lift the robe. It's not, koans are never about the literal truth of the matter anyway. In the Tao Te Ching, there is this line, the truth waits for eyes unclouded by longing. And then Monk Myo, faltering and trembling, took the next step. He said, I have come for the Dharma, not for the robe. I beg you, lay brother, to open the way for me. Desperate. Now the six patriarchs saw that Monk Myo was ready to receive his teaching. Until up to this point, he had this obsession with this emblem of teaching authority. And he was blinded by that obsession. But suddenly when he was offered it, he realized that what it was he really wanted. There are quite a few koans that show that if a student isn't willing to receive teaching, if he isn't ready to open himself to the teaching, to what the teacher has to offer, that there's no point in offering anything. That's where the Zazen comes in, that the Zazen has a way of ripening us so that what might be a closed shop opens. But until the student makes himself available and open, then there's no point in the teacher taking time with the student, especially if there are many other students who are ready and willing to receive what the teacher has to offer. So he saw his chance here, the sixth patriarch, and he said, "Thinking neither good nor evil, at this very moment, what is the original self of Monk Myo?" And that's the nub of the koan. Another translation has it, what is the original face of Monk Myo? Some source said that's the origin of that koan that in Japan and China is sometimes used as a breakthrough koan. What is my original face? Or what is my face before my parents gave birth to me? But the majority of the translations say original self. It doesn't matter. Same thing. What is the original self of Monk Myo? And that was the turning point. At this, Myo was all at once enlightened. His whole body was dripping with sweat. And then what comes next is always used to strike me as curious. With tears flowing, he bowed down and asked, "Besides these secret words and meanings, is there anything else deeper still?" So you could understand this as that the enlightenment of Myo was not the deepest. And he recognized that, and he recognized that there was something more that remained unresolved for him. Some of the greatest, the most illustrious Zen masters, even after a first, sometimes even a second enlightenment, they realized that it wasn't enough, that they had to go deeper. Hakuin is the one, the all-time champion of that, where he'd go after 3, 4, 5 enlightenments, he was still left unsatisfied. He still had to go further. It's a great, great testament to the spirit and the faith of anyone if one is not enough, especially if the one is very faint. The one awakening is quite faint. So, obviously it was a powerful experience for him. A tremendous release occurred, and yet then he asked, "Besides all of this, is there something else deeper still?" George Bernard Shaw said, satisfaction is death. And the patriarch replies, what has been revealed to you is not secret. If you look into your own true self, what is secret is right there. Well, this is just Zen 101. It's all within us. All understanding, all wisdom is ours. It's just a matter of mining it, actualizing it. And then Myo did something very human. He compares his previous teacher to the sixth patriarch. He said, though I trained under Obai, Obai is the Japanese word for Hongzhen, the fifth patriarch, though I trained under Obai with the other monks, I could not awaken to my true self. Now, thanks to your instruction, I am like one who has drunk water and actually knows for himself whether it is cold or warm. This is a classic Zen metaphor for awakening, for the direct experience of the truth that goes beyond anything in words. One who has drunk water and knows for himself through direct experience whether it's cold or warm. Lay brother, you are my teacher. And then the sixth patriarch said, we both have Obai for our teacher. See here first his acknowledgement of his own debt, the sixth patriarch's own debt to the fifth patriarch. And then his reminding this monk Myo that behind this awakening of his up there on the rock, behind it was all the work he had put in under the fifth patriarch. That this was just the final catalyst, and that he certainly can give credit to the fifth patriarch, even though the final tipping into awakening didn't happen with the sixth patriarch and not the fifth. Let's just savor again this the character and the trajectory of this monk Myo. His aspiration, or his goal, yeah, let's distinguish between goal and aspiration. His goal, that is, getting the robe and the bowl back, was so stained with unwholesome impulses, but it couldn't hold up in the face of the underlying aspiration. We go through so much in practice, Certainly that's in proportion to how long we practice. We plow through so many defilements in our mind and our heart. And we make all kinds of mistakes. But if we keep going, that's what all this is also teaching. If we just persevere, then we will surpass, we will move through all these things and beyond them. The important thing is to make the effort, to commit, to extend oneself, leave nothing behind. Shaw also said, a life spent making mistakes is not only more honorable, but more valuable than a life spent doing nothing. It's hard to argue with success. We can say what we want about this Myo and his coarse personality, but look where he ended up. Even those of us with the most troublesome personalities, if we embrace this Dharma and don't quit, we can prevail over these things. I'm going to skip over back now to the translation by Red Pine. Actually, it's not by Red Pine. It's the one in his book that's a different, an alternate translation, the one that has been used mostly for the last few hundred years. So here's where this other translation picks up from the case of today's case. So Monk Myo also asked, where should I go now? I said, now we're back to the Six Patriarchs first person account. This is reading from the Platform Sutra. I said, when you get to Yuan Chao, stop, and when you reach Mount Meng, stay there. Monk Myo bowed and headed back down the mountain and told the others who were giving chase, I climbed into the cliffs, but there was no sign of his trail. You'd better look for him somewhere else. And they all believed him. After I obtained the Dharma, this is still the sixth patriarch, Wenong, I returned from Huangmei, that was the mountain of the fifth patriarch, where no one knew me, and settled in such and such a place where no one knew me. There was a local scholar there who treated me with great respect. He had an aunt who was a Buddhist nun who was always chanting the Nirvana Sutra. By the way, the Nirvana Sutra is one of the first places, sources, maybe the first source, where Buddha nature appears, the phrase Buddha nature. After listening for a while, I understood its profound meaning, and I explained it to her. How do you explain to someone the profound meaning? When she showed me the text and asked me the meaning of a particular character, I said, I don't know how to read. Ask me about the meaning of the text. The nun said, if you don't know how to read, how can you understand the meaning? I said, the profound truths of the Buddhas don't depend on words. The nun looked at me differently after that and told the village elders, this is a man of the way. You should offer him your support. And so the villagers competed in paying their respects. That's an interesting sentence. They apparently are wanting to gain merit from this man who was just named a man of the way. The six patriarchs account continues. At that time, Paolin Monastery was in ruins due to the fires of war that marked the end of the Sui dynasty. They rebuilt the temple on the old foundations and invited me to stay there, and it soon became a center of practice. I lived there for more than 9 months. But a group of evildoers chased me down again. When I hid on a nearby mountain, they set fire to it and burned all the vegetation. But I escaped by wedging myself between some rocks. The rocks still have the marks from where I crouched and the pattern of my robe. This is why the place is called Refuge Rock. We're back into magic here. And then he says, I stayed with a band of hunters in Zhuhui. Altogether, I stayed there for 2 or 3 years. And sometimes I taught them the Dharma as circumstances permitted. Whenever they told me to take care of their nets, if I saw a creature in them, I set it free. And at every meal, I added vegetables to their pot of meat. When they asked me about this, I told them they should have some vegetables along with their meat. Sounds like Mom. Finally, I realized I couldn't hide out forever, and the time had come for me to spread the Dharma. And that's where he emerges from hiding and comes upon the two monks arguing about a flag, whether it was the flag that was flapping in the wind, whether it was the wind that was moving, or it was the flag that's moving. And that's another koan in the Mumunkan. But let's go now to back to number 23, Think Neither Good Nor Evil, and to Mumon's commentary. It must be said that in an emergency, the sixth patriarch did something extraordinary. He's like a kindly grandmother who peels a fresh lychee, removes the seed, and puts it into your mouth so that you need only swallow it. So the sixth patriarch just laid it all before him. But it wouldn't have done any good had Monk Myo not been ready for it. He had to swallow it. There's a charming little story from a collection of stories called Stories of the Spirit, Stories of the Heart, that I thought of with this strange case of Monk Myo and his, how driven he was. One of the monks in the temple was well known for his zealousness and effort. Day and night he would sit in meditation, not stopping even to eat or sleep. As time passed, he grew thinner and more exhausted. The master of the temple advised him to slow down, to take more care of himself. But the monk refused to heed his advice. The master asked, why are you rushing so? What is your hurry? I am after enlightenment, replied the monk. There's no time to waste. The master said, and how do you know that enlightenment isn't running on before you? How do you know that enlightenment is running on before you so that you have to rush after it? Perhaps it's behind you, and all you need to encounter it is to stand still. But you're running away from it. That's all the material we have on the life of, that's the rest of the end of the autobiographical account in the Platform Sutra, and then finally the verse by Mumon in the Mumonkan. You cannot describe it. You cannot picture it. You can never praise it fully. Stop all your groping and maneuvering. There is nowhere to hide your true self. When the world is annihilated, it remains indestructible. Back to the Nirvana Sutra, where one of the first references to Buddha nature. This may surprise many people in Zen because we use the term all the time, and our predecessors for centuries have been using the term Buddha nature. But in the time of the Buddha, they didn't have that term. I think that's what it seems. According to one text, it was something that came about with the development of the Mahayana school a couple hundred years or more after the Buddha's life. There are explanations behind that where it was felt that without something called, so without some kind of ultimate principle like Buddha nature or central mind, true nature, original nature, without something like that, that too many people would just be completely lost and possibly falling into a kind of despair. But this, what we call true self, true nature, Buddha nature, there's nothing to it. We can say it's a thing in as much as there's a word for it, there's a phrase, so that distinguishes it from other things. But really, there's nothing outside our true nature. That's why there's nowhere to hide it. There's nothing but this true self. How can that be? We look into the mind and we see all of these defilements, this greed, anger, and delusion, all of our shortcomings. And yet, there is only this true self. Our true self is no self. True nature is no nature. Self, nature, true self, true nature, all of this suggests that it's a thing apart from other things. But we have to use words. And so we have these words, and we have words like it. You cannot describe it. You cannot picture it. Can never praise it fully. Stop all your groping and maneuvering. Stop grasping after this thing that is no thing. And when the world is annihilated, it remains indestructible. In what sense does it remain indestructible? If you divide, if you split off true nature as some kind of a spirit or energy that is apart from matter, then that's dualistic. That's not it. Our time is up. We'll stop now and recite the four vows.